Mully and Hall. Mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
You're the president of baseball ops with the White Sox or the Cubs. You could take either job, Kenny.
Next 5 years?
Yeah.
Give me the White Sox roster.
You would take the White Sox.
Give me their farm system and...
You get it all.
I'd like to play with it. Because there's upside there that the Cubs don't have. In fact, the Cubs face a lot of questions in the coming years. With Bryant up and others up as well, they're going to be a team that is going to have to fill a lot of holes. People don't realize it. It's not just Bryant that's up after 21. It's Baez. It's Schwarber. It's a number of players. Contreras after 22. Rizzo after 21. Now, they'll keep some of them, but this is a team that is getting older. Mm-hmm. It's a team that does not have a farm system nearly at the level of the White Sox. A team that has not produced young pitching in the Theo Epstein era.
Mm-hmm.
So, from that perspective, while the White Sox young pitching is not great, I'd like that team.
This all happened because Ken Rosenstein wrote an article.
That was Ken Rosenthal, the MLB Network, and everybody agreed that they would take the White Sox over the next 5 years. You know?
They did.
But the problem is, would you take Theo over the next 5 years?
Here's the thing, Molly. Okay, so we're talking about this because they brought it up, and this is the offseason of, you know, looking ahead, and you have these kind of conversations. I don't feel comfortable abandoning the next 2 years for the Cubs. I do feel comfortable projecting success over the next 5 for the White Sox. But do you know what I mean? There's this problem with the Cubs when having this conversation that to ignore the prime years potentially still while they're under contract, Javi Baez, Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, Wilson Contreras, still a member of the Cubs organization. He's still been the subject of trade speculation, but he's still there. I don't know that when you have a core that has won before and still has the capability of winning again, if you surround, if you supplement your starting rotation, if you get a better, stronger bullpen, if you do the things that I think, frankly, Theo Epstein has done before in the next 2 years, I wouldn't want to give that up. So I don't know that I would be on board with picking the White Sox in that discussion as much confidence as I have in the White Sox being better over the next 5 years, overall, perhaps. But I don't think the next... 2021 is the magic number for the Cubs.
I don't know. I don't see any way you couldn't take the White Sox talent over the five-year period because there are so many young guys with so much upside, and you kind of know who the Cubs are, and the contracts are coming up, and how much you're going to pay for them,
right?
All that stuff. I'm with you. I think the Cubs are in their prime, and they should be pretty good for the next couple of years, but I think the White Sox – should be ready to take a major step forward, and it's really exciting because we haven't seen it happen. And that's the problem. We haven't seen it happen. So it's all projection, and some of it is really good projection, and it's obvious. But, you know, think about how we got here. Think about how many injuries there were and how many guys had their process interrupted by injury.
Arm injuries.
Down and, I mean,
with pitching and young pitching, it's hard to project.
That's the difficult element of this thing. As much as I want to sit here and tell you that it's going to be the White Sox, and, you know, I mean, I'm sitting here cheering for the White Sox, don't get me wrong. But I, you know, sometimes once you have something established, then you're just kind of, you know, it's never going to be perfect, but you got to ask yourself, how good can it get? And with the Cubs, there's going to be a big trade here. They're going to have to trade
someone.
You
get someone. That
sense. You get that sense because they want to clear out some payroll. They want to get – so it. How does that turn out? And how and where does that leave them? And are they improved doing that? With the White Sox, I worry about some of the things that need to be done. And
well, because they haven't done it before.
Well,
this group hasn't done it before.
Listen, I'm all over the White Sox getting better and winning. And I can't wait for the season to begin. I want them to fill out that roster and go into it feeling like anything can happen.
I think that neither one of us want to discount the possibility that the Cubs could do something bold that puts them in a position to compete for a championship over the next 2 years. And I think that if you ask me, why do you believe that? Because you've seen Theo do it before, and I think you have a core that you have seen win before. I'm not saying the Cubs are going to do that, but I think if you parse the question this way, over the next 5 years, the White Sox could be in the playoffs more often than the Cubs, and yet the Cubs could have a better chance of winning a World Series or getting to the World Series, if that makes any sense. Because I think over the next two seasons, they might be in a go-for-it mode. I don't know who's going to be making the decisions for the Cubs after 2021, and that's a big part of this as well.
Is Giolito in the Cy Young conversation? Is Kopech going to come back and be this entity? Cease has to improve. There was a lot of pieces in place, but we haven't seen it happen yet. So I think it's fair to kind of hold judgment.
Those three guys you mentioned.
And Ronaldo Lopez.
Let's not throw him out. To a lesser degree, I'm not throwing him out. He could still contribute.
He could be this year's Giolito.
Those three guys that you mentioned are key to answering that question and projecting, because if Kopech, Cease, and Giolito reach their potential in the next 5 years, the next 3 years, you're talking about a team that's going to be a perennial October participant deep into October. But if they run into the
Mankata
problems,
Mankata could be an MVP. There are great things that could happen.
Yeah. How about, we haven't even seen Luis Robert yet.
Right. But we don't know. Because we haven't seen
anything. The thing with the Cubs, to me, 84-win team last year, and we've seen all of these guys in or around their primes, but who on the Cubs is the arrow pointing up for? Like, who has another level that they can get to? I feel like they've already...
Chris Bryant, Kevin. Chris Bryant?
Potentially,
yes.
Sure.
I mean, he could be an MVP level again.
Baez
could return to
the
MVP level.
Have we seen
the
best of Baez? That seems to be a big argument.
No question.
You know, we've seen the best of him because he's a free swinger. And he's not going to have the same kind of impact.
Look where he went from MVP hobby 2 years ago to last year where he fell off the table.
But, Kevin, wouldn't you agree, though, even as a Sox fan, the unknown is what you can't factor into the Cubs, and you think that's almost gives you confidence they're going to figure out a way to field a contender.
And you're right, because this current group, this brain trust on the South Side, hasn't been able to do it so far. And I understand the skepticism and the fact that a lot of things have to go right, and you need more Giolito-type ascensions from the other pitchers. You need more Moncada ascensions from some of the younger players. It's a lot more question marks, no question about it. But with the Cubs, I feel like with this current group, and especially the pitching staff, I mean, I wouldn't take any of those guys for the next 5 years. Kyle Hendricks, the only one.
Yeah, that's the problem. They've got John Lester is not the entity he once was. Cole Hamels was once a great pitcher.
Former Cub.
And I mean, it does look like former Cub, right? Because you're trying to save some money. And, we know Q's had star-crossed time on the north side and been great. And a lot of people mad at him because of what they gave up for him. We'll see if Aloy can emerge and hit 35 homers and... I mean, look, it's an exciting time for the White Sox.
Let me ask you Sox fans a question real quick before we get to a phone call. In free agency, when you project things, and we talk about the right fielder in Castellanos, what about a guy that really hasn't been discussed in terms of the White Sox target, Didi Gregorius, who is out there, he's a winner, he plays shortstop.
Yep.
Would you pursue him and with the idea of moving Tim Anderson to the outfield to play right field? Because it would give you, obviously, a new right fielder. You have to find a spot for that for Tim Anderson. But is that a possible route that they could take in free agency? No.
I think they're pretty committed to Tim Anderson at shortstop for another year at least.
And I think
just
it would be,
it out there.
Tim Anderson made such a jump with his bat last year, and he said that he can do the same thing with his fielding. And I'm not here to tell you he can't, but this is the kind of thing that we're talking about. These guys have to be everything. He's got to become a better fielding shortstop.
Without question.
He has to be able to play that position better. His bat's been great. So he solved one issue. Can he become the entire package? And I think there's a lot of questions about a lot of these guys with the White Sox, right? And they're still very young. So hopefully all the answers are positive. But, Madrigal's coming up. And presumably he's going to be the second baseman, and he doesn't strike out. He's a guy that his on-base percentage is going to be great. Can he hit it all? Is he just going to be like a slappy hitter who can also walk, and how are you going to employ him? I just think there's a lot of questions with a lot of these guys. You mentioned Luis Robert. I mean, he's he looks like a phenom. Now, can he stay healthy? Is he going to have ticky-tack injuries? He's had some little issues getting to this point. So it's as excited as you are, much like Eloy Jimenez.
Exactly right. And
exactly right.
You're pretty happy with what he produced.
Well, but I mean, there's still questions, aren't there?
He needs to do it again.
He needs to be a better fielder.
He needs to stay healthy.
Right?
He needs to get better defensively.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or you need to figure out how to what to do with him. So I think there's a lot of questions with all these guys, and we're going to get more answers moving forward. But it's, you know, there's still questions because, you know, the Cubs have won a World Series. And they got a core of guys that were on that team. The White Sox have been down and out. And now all these guys that they got as a result of the teardown are starting to come into their own. You got to see it, though. You got to see it. You know, you think about it, man. I mean, you know, we mentioned Dane Dunning, you know, had his arm done, right? You look at Kopech, same thing. You know, Jake Berger is an example of a guy that just keeps blowing out his Achilles for some reason. You know, Zach Birdie was going to be the fastest guy to the major leagues because he was the closer, and he had to get his arm done. I mean, we can go through the list
of all these guys. I mean, because it's depressing.
It's unending.
And it's a reality check.
But that's what a rebuild is, and that's what you got to get through.
So how would you answer the question? White Sox or Cubs? President of baseball operations for the next 5 years.
Well, you know the answer. I mean, you know the answer.
Because you're wearing the hat.
I mean, what the hell?
You're wearing the hat. Move over, Rick Kahn. I would still be the Cubs, only because of the opportunity to win the next 2 years.
Because you're wearing the hat.
Yeah, but then I would want to drive south, and I'd say, okay, I'll take over the White Sox in 2021.
Let's get to the phone lines. We've got Kevin in Palatine. Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Hey, morning, guys. How are you?
Good.
It is an interesting question, but, I mean, there's no way that anyone would take the Cubs. The Cubs are going to be fighting with the Brewers for third and fourth in the National League Central. They have no pitching. They have a bloated payroll of overpaid veterans. But a quick question, just to both of you guys, honestly, how often do you think the GM of the Yankees sits around and saying, man, I hope we're better than the Mets? Shouldn't your bar be higher? Like, this is such an old, stupid argument. You guys should be talking about the Astros and the Yankees.
Oh, come on. And it was a conversation they had at MLB Network.
Yeah.
We're following up on it.
David, just a quick question for you. You're talking about multiple playoffs in the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. The Sox have never been to the playoffs in back-to-back years. Shouldn't that be your goal first, just to make the playoffs? You have no idea what these young guys are going to do. And, David, you can get as mad as you want. I'm just asking. Shouldn't the goal be the World Series?
I'm not mad, Kevin.
Yeah, you clearly are, David.
Okay.
All right, buddy. Thanks for the phone call.
You don't seem mad to me. You seem like you're in a delightful
mood. This is a great conversation.
He can't wait to take over Craig Kimbrel. Look at him. Mark is in Barrington. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Mark.
That guy seemed to be pretty mad considering he was going in all in on the White Sox, and Dave just picked the Cubs to be a better roster, but beside the point. I think it's the known versus the unknown, and this is what you guys were talking about earlier, but that's why I called in. The Cubs have the known players, and we've seen what they can do with Bryant and Baez and Schwarber to a little bit. Even though they can ascend a little bit, we still kind of feel like we know what they are, even though they can probably get a little bit better. So I would still probably take their roster because we know what they have. But with the White Sox, it's the unknown. It's can Kopech come back and play? Can Luis Roberts stay healthy? Can all these guys get better next year? Can Tim Anderson repeat what he's doing? It's the unknown of those guys that makes people think that's going to be the better team. And I can't disagree with that either.
That's a good way to put it.
It's a great way of putting it,
yeah,
Mark.
It is. Yeah. The knowns outweigh the unknowns when you're talking about the Cubs and the White Sox. And I think there's strength and security in kind of clinging to what you know.
But I like the unknown, too.
I get that because it's exciting.
I am more of an astronaut than you.
You are.
I want to go out and explore.
I'm here just to watch you soar.
312-644-6767.
And to get angry.
How is it stupid to talk about the Cubs and the White
never,
Sox?
Never, never, never.
MLB Network did it, and we're following up on it because it's an interesting conversation.
In a bad mood.
And it has nothing to do with not having higher goals. It's just that it's, you know, the Cubs are a team that supposedly was going to win a World Series last year. That should have done better than they did. So they're trying to get better, and they're trying to get back. And the White Sox tore it all down to try to get back to that point where they were in 05. So let's see who gets there first. Why can't we discuss it?
They are
312-644-6767.
They're just exciting enough to worry you.
Yeah.
So that's
and
good.
Don't get mad. Let's just have a very nice, calm conversation without the inner anger.
Oh, shut up.
Oh, there it is. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Mully and Haw flashback.
Flashback. Flashback. Flashback.
What's your scouting report on Dak Prescott?
I played against him in college. You know, he's a guy, if you let him, he can scratch the field, you know, vertically. You put pressure on him, that's when he struggles the most. He can run. He can extend plays with his feet. It's kind of accurate. So we just got to put the pressure on him, keep him in the pocket, and just make him make his mistakes in the back end. We got to play tight sound coverage. And, you know, just when the opportunity presents itself, we got to go up and get the ball in the back end.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score. That is, of course, Eddie Jackson.
Eddie!
Thank you.
Eddie.
Yeah, he beat Dak Prescott a couple times at Alabama, Mississippi State.
Come on.
Would go at each other, and this isn't the same thing.
That's not a fair.
No, it's not. Fairs. Yeah. What? It's not because Alabama and Mississippi State?
I'm saying if Dak was the quarterback at Alabama, he'd be beating Mississippi State.
Yeah, you're
this
right.
It's not a... The talent level is absurd,
and
at Alabama,
and at different points of his career, Eddie began his career playing against Dak Prescott as a cornerback,
sure.
And then he switched over to play safety. The experience against him, you know, probably just gives him a familiarity. But I think Dak Prescott comes in with the respect of being that he deserves. I mean, he's the NFL's leading passer right now. He's got more yards, I think, than any quarterback. Is that correct? They'll fling it around, and they are a good offense. They're a big challenge for the Bears defense. And I think Chuck Pagano, who spoke yesterday, it's inherent on him to come after Dak Prescott, make him uncomfortable as possible, and trust your, you know, do you trust your cornerbacks after the display against the Lions when, you know, Prince Mukamura got beaten for on a double move? It was a great move by Galladay. You still have to trust those guys again. You still have to trust them to be able to come through because if you don't apply pressure on Dak Prescott, he will sit back there in the pocket and pick you apart.
Yeah, Prescott, number one in yards. Number two is Jameis Winston. Number three, Phillip Rivers.
So that tells you
that, number four, yeah. Jared Goff.
Yards are yards.
Yards are yards.
Yards are yards.
Yeah. Mitch is not top in yards. He doesn't bother with those crappy statistics.
You can take numbers.
26 for Mitch.
Yeah. Oh, well, okay. Oh, well, that's not as good.
That's just mean, Kevin. 26th.
That's just mean.
It's better than the offenses right now.
What about in the last 3 weeks?
Okay. Or what about since week four, Mitch and Tom Brady have similar statistics?
And that's the only thing similar about them.
Okay.
I mean, wait a minute.
Yeah, wait a minute.
They're both quarterbacks.
We digress. If you were to rank the things that scare you about the Cowboys offense in order, though, in order of priorities.
I would say number one, Ezekiel Elliott. Number two, Zeke. Number three, probably Ezekiel Elliott. Number four, Zeke. And then maybe the receiver and the quarterback down the line a little.
That's not showing any respect to the receiving core.
I think
Zeke.
I think Zeke is going to be the guy that causes the major problem.
Amari Cooper is dangerous. Jason Witten overlooked.
Who is he? Not familiar with him. No, Yesterday's news.
He's a very good announcer.
Yeah.
No.
And that's not true either. He could still catch two touchdowns.
The point's a good one.
I'm sure nobody ever heard of it.
The Bears have to stop the Cowboys' running game to have any hope of winning this game, because if you run the football against the Bears, as we have seen, teams that are able to do that, you have success. You control the clock.
Yeah.
You force their offense to play in trail mode. You have forced their offense to do things they're not capable of doing. And for the Bears to win this football game, they've got to come out and have the running game established the way you think the Cowboys can against the Bears.
Here's the thing. Listening to what Eddie said there. Dak under pressure. Name a quarterback who's better under pressure than not under pressure. Quarterbacks are a lot better when they're not under constant pressure. Guess what? If you run the ball, you take all the pressure off the quarterback. So if they're able to run the ball, then every play-action fake becomes a huge danger. Amari Cooper becomes even more of a danger. You'll take the lid off. I mean, you said it. You saw what Kenny Golladay did. If you could have a receiver between Kenny Golladay and God bless him, local product, he's playing where he once played where the old Quigley South was.
That's great.
Where I saw the Pope.
That's where your head goes when you see Kenny Golladay.
Yeah, but
I love that.
God bless him. But would you rather have Amari Cooper?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Wouldn't it have been something if Kevin White wasn't the guy that the Bears elected? It was Amari Cooper.
That's why I don't think you can dismiss him that quickly. I think that he's a threat turn this game around.
I'm not dismissing him. I'm saying how many yards did Kenny Golladay have? I mean, it was ridiculous.
And they won anyway. Yeah.
And the Bears managed to win. I don't think you're going to win if he's doing that because I think they got a significantly better offense and a better running back and a better quarterback.
And this offensive line for the Cowboys, even though it is banged up, is still
good.
Still very good offensive line. They could you can't let them control the line of scrimmage.
No.
And that's what the Cowboys, in theory, do.
What is today? Today is Thursday or Friday?
Today's Tuesday.
Friday. No, it's Tuesday, but it's Thursday, right? Today Thursday?
Today tomorrow? Is Tuesday, but it's a traditional football Friday.
Oh, so it's Friday.
In the NFL circles.
Yeah, today's Friday.
Yeah, because tomorrow will be
we
Saturday.
We got a game on Sunday.
But tomorrow is a Bears Duncan Friday on a Wednesday.
Well, so but we can do
today
that.
Today is technically the Friday.
But
tomorrow's
today's
Saturday.
Tuesday.
There's no availability tomorrow.
Mully's talking like a coach. And in coach speak, today is the NFL Friday.
I'm more worried about Duncan and Ford, personally. It would be a built-for tough Bears Friday, Monday on Friday.
But that means that Khalil Mack talks today. We'll have something to say then. He usually talks on Fridays.
By the way, Kenny Golladay, 158 yards versus the Bears on Thanksgiving.
He's God
a
bless
hell
that
of
young
a
man.
Player. Yeah. See, that's the kind of guy you draft in the third round, not Hronis Grasu.
Wow.
As a general rule.
Why did you have to go there?
Well, I do.
Where is Hronis? Sorry, is he back making pizza?
Would you have preferred Jonathan Bullard?
Oh.
Yeah, I could go on.
What kind of year is he having with the Arizona Cardinals? Just curious.
Probably not a very good one because he's on the Arizona Cardinals, and I think they're all having a bad year defensively. We should talk to Mike Florio. And by we, I mean you guys, not me.
No, no.
He doesn't know my name.
Please, you take over. You seem to have already.
He knows your name, Kevin. I mean, you were...
Yeah, you're Kevin.
You directed traffic for Olin Krutz and Patrick Manley quite well the other day.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I was a pass-first point guard in that role.
You did it well. That was a good show.
That's the way to play it.
Dishing the ball off to the big fellas.
Mike Florio. ProFootballTalk.com. NBC Sports. Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
Hey, my name!
NFL Insider Mike Florio.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We love our chance to talk to Mike Florio, and he joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline, Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning,
hey
Mike.
Guys. How are you?
Good. Oh, we're all fired up. I mean, it's all there in front of them now.
You guys are drinking early this morning, aren't you?
Well, you know, when you watch the Vikings lose and you think the Bears are only two games behind those guys and they already beat them once. And by the way, Mike, their signature victory of the year, they have one.
Yes.
Dallas doesn't. Was against the Vikings here in Chicago when Mitch got hurt and missed most of the game. I don't know what it says. I don't know what it means.
Well, and yeah, big game coming up on Thursday night, and the Bears still play the Packers. And look, it's not going to be an easy run for the Bears, even if they run the table. I think the Vikings actually will be fine the rest of the way. I don't think anybody reasonably expected them to win in Seattle last night. And the fact that they were down 17 in the fourth quarter and stormed back, that's something that if they push the buttons the right way, ends up being fuel for this stretch run. The only difference for the Vikings in losing that game, if they get in, they're going to be potentially a 12-4-6 seed that's going to have to do it the hard way, and it's going to be really hard this year going on the road to Green Bay and then New Orleans, San Francisco, or Seattle, and then New Orleans or San Francisco or Seattle after that. It's a hell of a gauntlet this year in the NFC. This is a good year to miss the playoffs. Let's just put it that way.
And, you know, Mike, the narrative will be Kirk Cousins falls to 0-8 in primetime games on Monday night and everything. And certainly he made a bad decision when it was 4th-and-3 and he forced the pass to Irv Smith Jr. I thought that. But overall, I thought Cousins played well enough to win, and I thought he was better the further behind they fell, and he was one of the big reasons they were able to come back.
One thing he did that really impressed me, because we go crazy when other quarterbacks do this, with 10 minutes or so left. They're down 10 points. There was a sense of urgency there. How many times are we yelling at the TV? The clock is ticking. You're down two scores. Get your ass to the line of scrimmage and call the next play. He was doing that. He was checking every box. But the one big deficiency for him continues to be game on the line. Are you going to make the big throw? Are you going to make the right decision? Alexander Mattison is the guy he should have thrown to on 4th and 3. It was a bad play call. It was a very simple design. Tight ends on each side in the slot. Both guys ran an out. The receivers spread wide, went deep, and Mattison flared out of the backfield. I'd like to have seen something a little more creative on 4th and 3 with the game on the line. But when you're not mobile, you got to make a quick decision. And when you make a quick decision, sometimes you make the wrong decision. And it was a bad decision, a bad throw. And at a time when it felt like everything was going Minnesota's way and they were going to go down and score, and then the question becomes how much time's left on the clock and can Seattle force overtime? I mean, it really felt inevitable. And then the air came out of the balloon very, very quickly for the Vikings.
Mike, I can come up with a lot of reasons why Freddie Kitchens has to go, but the idea that he wore the Pittsburgh started a T-shirt... It's just another. I mean, how rockhead are you?
And then he said yesterday his only regret was he didn't zip his coat up. So, you know, the like, yeah, as long as no one sees it, I have no regrets about wearing it. The whole experiment wasn't a mistake in that it did make sense for the Browns to roll the dice on a guy who got a lot of the credit for getting the most out of Baker Mayfield. They weren't going to make Greg Williams the permanent coach after the bounty scandal and just the fact that the guy's a little bit erratic at times, and that's good as a defensive coordinator, not good as a head coach. And, you know, the idea is if you bring in another defensive coach and you let Kitchen stay as the offensive coordinator and things continue to go well, somebody else is going to hire him away. So make him the head coach. I made that argument. Just go ahead and make him the head coach and see what happens. But you also have to be willing to say, well, we tried it. And there have been plenty of coordinators who bump up to the next level and fail, and you move on. And I think the Browns really need to consider moving on after this season. I know they have a reputation for having a quick trigger, and I think sometimes it's caused them to maybe have a slow trigger, like with Hugh Jackson. I think with Freddie Kitchens, they need to make a change. And right now it feels like it's pointing in that direction.
Mike, in Jacksonville, Gardner Minshew is back. Nick Foles is out. The future for Nick Foles remains kind of uncertain in this offseason. Is there any what's the financial commitment if they cut him? What are the ramifications of that? Because obviously here in Chicago, any veteran quarterback that could be available, there's going to be some curiosity surrounding.
They owe him $15.125 million fully guaranteed next year. And the challenge becomes, can you find someone to take that obligation on? Do you have to pay part of the salary like the Texans had to do when they traded Jadeveon Clowney? Do you have to do a Brock Osweiler hot potato deal where you have to send trade value to the team that takes on that salary? I don't think Foles is quite at the point of Osweiler, but it's going to be hard to find a match. And Foles has had the strangest career arc, and it's really an EKG. I mean, he started great with Philadelphia, then he gets traded to the Rams. He was horrible with the Rams. He was with Kansas City and Matt Nagy for a while, for a year, and it felt like there was an opportunity for Foles to do to Alex Smith what Colin Kaepernick once did to Alex Smith, where a concussion put Smith on the sidelines and the backup comes in and plays well, and Foles was playing for the guy who drafted him, Andy Reid, and it just didn't work well enough for Foles to stay there. But then he becomes the Super Bowl MVP somehow. I mean, what kind of Slumdog Millionaire scenario was that for the Eagles in 2017 in hindsight, where everything fell their way, right? And everything fell Foles' way. Every play that could have gone their way went their way. And now he just looks like that guy who bumbled around for the Rams. And so I don't know that you even want him at this point, but he's going to be available. And I think that it would be smart for the Jaguars to find a way to clear him off the roster. I said this earlier today on PFT Live. If you would get rid of Foles, regardless of salary cap or guaranteed salary consequences, then find a way to get rid of him. Just bite the bullet and move on. Let Minshew be the guy. Not have Foles hovering over his shoulder. Not have a backup making $15 million next year when the starter's making $580,000, and just go forward with Minshew. I mean, they may have found a diamond in the rough with Minshew. They need to let that play out. And they're going to do that at least for the rest of the season. What happens next year? Look, a lot of it depends upon who's going to be making the decision. First decision for ownership is who does he entrust the organization to? And then that person or group of persons will be making the decision about Minshew and Foles.
You know, it's interesting because Jason Garrett comes in here with Dallas, and boy, I mean, you want to talk about a guy who's sort of a dead man walking. Doesn't look like he's got any chance of, I think, what was the pronunciation? Super Bowl or bust. He's got to win a Super Bowl to keep his job. It seems pretty far-fetched that something like that could happen at this point. But
I think if
know.
He gets to the NFC Championship, he'll stay. They haven't been to the NFC Championship since 1995. If he gets them there and they have a week where they get to view and consider and relish the possibility of making it to the Super Bowl, I think that's enough for him to get another contract. I think that's high part. But you're right. That's the sense. He's got to win the Super Bowl to stay. But I think it wouldn't come to that if he gets at least to the Final Four.
Mike, the Eagles lose to the Dolphins, so obviously that division is a mess. But what team do you think arrives Thursday night more desperate, the Bears or the Cowboys?
Well, that's a great question. I'd say the Cowboys, just because even though they still have a one-game lead, they need to show that they can win. I think it's all going to come down to Week 16 when they go to Philadelphia, but they just need to get a win. And for the Bears, I mean, they're 6-6, but look at who they've beaten recently. They're not good enough to beat the Cowboys, and maybe that makes them play looser. I don't know. This is the time of year where crazy stuff happens, but I think the Cowboys are more desperate because their expectations in season and preseason are much higher than where they are now. And I know the Bears' expectations coming into the season were a lot higher, but that balloon popped. For the Cowboys, it didn't. And there's still plenty of life left because the Eagles have been so bad. I mean, think about it. If the Eagles had been as good this year as I thought they were going to be, Jason Garrett would already be gone. And but for the fact that the Eagles have been this bad, the Cowboys wouldn't be leading the division. But I think the Cowboys just need to get on the right track as they have that game looming at Philadelphia, because I really do think it comes down to that. And play this forward, because I'm fascinated by the possibility of the Cowboys winning the division at 8-8, clinching it Week 16 when they complete the sweep of the Eagles, resting their starters Week 17, and essentially getting a de facto bye and welcoming in the loser of that Week 17 49ers Seahawks bloodbath for the number one or number two seed, where the loser's got to go on the road the next week. Wouldn't it be funny if the Cowboys win that game against like a 13-3 or 12-4 team that comes limping into Dallas because they just went through that battle with their division rival? I mean, the Cowboys, they have the talent to win in January. They don't have the coaching to win in January, but they've got the talent to win in January.
We know that Tom Brady is frustrated with everything that's happened with the offense, and he's struggling, hasn't had a great season. Maybe he needs help, and there's been the rumors of circulating are pretty interesting. They're going to try to get Gronk to come back, or Antonio Brown? Really? Could that happen?
Well, the window slammed shut on Gronkowski playing for anyone in 2019 on Saturday. That was by rule the last day he could have been reinstated to the Patriots roster. Now, for Antonio Brown, look, I think Brady would love to have him back. I think Bill Belichick would probably like to have him, but that bridge got blown up the last time around. And one of the key factors, Tom Curran explained this, he's with NBC Sports Boston, he was on PFT Live a week or so ago, because Drew Rosenhaus and Antonio Brown did not disclose when Brown was first signed by the Patriots the fact that that threatened lawsuit was out there, because they apparently asked that broad question, is there anything we need to know about? And they said no. The fact that they didn't disclose that lawsuit is the kiss of death. And then I guess yesterday there was something posted by Brown on Instagram about Robert Kraft again, after Brown has apologized. I mean, Brown gets so frustrated about the fact that he's in this limbo under the personal conduct policy. He does stupid things on social media. But there was something else yesterday that, if that's something he really posted on his Instagram account, there was never a chance anyway, but there's even less of a chance now.
Mike, with a quarter season left to go, who is your leading candidate for Coach of the Year?
Well, you know, Coach of the Year is a fascinating award, because to me, it typically is based upon the coach that most exceeded the generally accepted preseason expectations for his team. Like Nagy last year. Everybody expected the Bears to be in last place. They win the division. He's Coach of the Year. I think Mike Tomlin deserves a ton of consideration, not because of his performance in relation to how we felt about the Steelers going into the season, but given everything they've been through, and given that they are the inferior team in pretty much every game, and they just keep winning, 7-2 since starting 0-3. I think Tomlin is a serious candidate. They're going to have to make it to the playoffs. Now, even without that, you got to look at the teams that finish with the byes. And if John Harbaugh takes the Ravens to the top seed in the AFC, how is he not a candidate? If Sean Payton Five games without Drew Brees, finishes in the number one spot. How is he not a serious candidate? Kyle Shanahan, Pete Carroll. I mean, as the cream continues to rise, those are the coaches that we look at and say, wow, these guys have done a great job in a very competitive year. But I think Tomlin is a guy that we need to be thinking about and talking about, because if they somehow pull that rabbit out of their butts and get to the playoffs after starting 0-3 with no Ben Roethlisberger, no Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell's long gone. They've had injuries all season long. They didn't have Juju Smith-Schuster or James Conner this past weekend against a Browns team that is better on paper than the Steelers, and they still beat them. If they keep this going and they end up in the postseason, Mike Tomlin seriously deserves consideration.
It's great. It's a great observation. Mike, thank you so much.
Good stuff, right. Mike.
See you guys. Thanks.
That is Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, NBC Sports.
Good point about Tomlin.
Yeah, it's a great point about Tomlin. That's my guy.
Nobody's talking about Sean McDermott.
No. No one is.
Bills could win 10, 11 games.
Doesn't matter. They're going to trail the Pats in that division, and no one's going to talk about it. It's Mully and Hall. Certainly not here. Certainly not now. We'll bring in Danny Connor next. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.